And welcome back. Glad you're with us tonight. This is going to be another memorable program. We have done several in the past, of course, on the issue of survival after death. The most notable, I think, without question, have been those with Gary Schwartz and Ron Pearson and Michael Roll. Back tonight with us, Michael Roll and Professor Peter Wadhams. We're very honored to have Peter back. He, of course, of Cambridge University. He's a remarkable man. John Sampson will be joining us later on as well. Michael Roll has been involved with several sterling visits to this program over the last several years. He, along with Ron Pearson, have really been standing up and pushing back the darkness to try to open up the issue, at least for discussion, in quarters that won't usually discuss this issue of survival after death as a branch of not metaphysics or the paranormal, but physics. Survival after death as a branch of physics. Need to keep that in mind. I hope you're online tonight because we're going to be looking at a lot of very interesting pictures that came out of the early part of the last century having to do with the work of Sir William Crookes and others. It is an extraordinary field. These are extraordinary guests we have on the program tonight. And of course, it may be the biggest question of all to most of you. What happens when we die? Do we really die? Or is it just like your car finally breaks down and you get out and you keep right on moving ahead? Michael Roll, welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. Good to hear you again.
Thank you. It's very nice to have you on the phone. All right, here's the question I always ask my UK guests. Did you stay up or did you get up?
No, I set my alarm clock.
You're tough. It's 3 a.m. in the UK right now, middle of the night. And it's not always the easiest time to work, but Michael is here and always holds forth brilliantly. Let me welcome Professor Peter Wadhams right now as well. Are you there, Peter?
Yes.
Nice to have you back.
Yes, thanks very much. Nice to be here.
Did you set your alarm as well, sir?
Yes. Yes, so did I.
All right. Michael, let's go back to you first, and let me ask just a couple of generic questions. In general terms, you have been fighting with everything you have for a long time. How goes the war against the establishment, the entrenched, who would rather not this question see the light of day?
Yes, I've only just been fighting to present the case, as you know, Jeff.
Yes.
And, well, thanks to the Jeff Rentz program going across the world and the internet, the fight's over. The feedback tells me that I no longer have to fight. It's just gaining its own momentum, so to speak. You only have to tell people about the proof of survival. The same as the round earthers only had to present their case. Mm-hmm. And it was good night, the flat earthers. Once people had both cases in front of them, the round earth or flat earth, they all go with the round earth once they have access to it.
That's right. This is really a question that should be embraced by everyone with great vigor. It is certainly underlying everything we do on this planet, on this plane. And the evidence, as you and Ron Pearson and certainly Professor Wadhams have presented on this program and in other venues, is not only overwhelming, but it is, I think, liberating in the greatest possible cosmic sense of it all. It makes things, in a way, much more tolerable. And Lord knows the world has descended several notches, Michael, since you and I first talked.
Oh, yes. It's quite incredible what's happening. It seems to be all meant. I think people need this real shake-up to make them take notice of what's going on and don't listen to the propaganda. All they have to do is just look at our two websites and everything is there. They're going to have to do a little bit of studying. You can't just listen to a broadcast and Bob's your uncle sort of thing. You've got to follow out what we're saying and look at the references that we're giving.
All right, look at the evidence. And when you do that, all of a sudden, lights start coming on all over the place. Michael, one other question for you, then we'll get to Professor Wadhams. The Queen Mother, now late Queen Mother, had a great deal of interest in this field. Would you tell me a little bit about her and her affections toward this issue of continuing life?
Yes, well, the whole of the royal family, because of the work that Queen Victoria did. Queen Victoria was absolutely devastated when she lost Prince Albert. And she decided that in Victorian times, this was, of course, when Sir William Crookes first came on the scene, she ordered the finest medium in the country, a chap called Lees, to come into her palace. And this Lees fellow made contact immediately with Prince Albert. And
this
Queen,
is in Buckingham?
Yes, one of the palaces there. Mm-hmm. And he made contact immediately with Prince Albert and proved to Queen Victoria that it was definitely her husband by giving crushing personal things that only they knew together, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, right, to Lees, you've got to pack up and move into the palace. I want you here all the time. And Lees says, no, they're telling me from the next world that there's no need for me to do that because on your staff, you have a medium who's just as good as me, and he can make contact with Prince Albert. That's her gilly that we all know about, John Brown.
Huh. Hmm.
And that's why all this rumours about the Queen having an affair with John Brown came about, because she was locked away in rooms with him, but he was only making contact with with her husband, you see.
Far more exciting than an otherwise illicit liaison, I would think.
That's right. Anyway, she passed this knowledge down to the whole of the royal family, of course, and they most of them have contacted mediums. And the Queen Mother did, indeed, Lillian Bailey. She made contact with her husband when King George VI died. And so they've been reading the subject. They don't believe in it any more than I do. They've studied it, you see.
I understand. Very well stated.
But you can't accept or reject anything, as you know, Jeff, unless you make a study of something. And well, people haven't had access to the proof of survival. I'm not giving evidence. Yeah. I'm only interested in presenting the proof. Repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions backed up with a mathematical theory. And that's what's blocked. Evidence is being allowed through all over the world now. We've got that wonderful American medium, John Edwards, giving wonderful personal evidence to people. He's a mental medium. They give evidence. But there are materialization mediums that give the crushing proof, repeatable experiments.
It was about, well, I guess a little over 100 years ago, Professor Peter Wadhams, that in England, the issue of studying this field really came into its own and was very popular, especially in the parlors. Not necessarily in mainstream science then, although that we'll get to that in a minute, but there was a very big movement of people who were fascinated with the idea of what they used to call then the paranormal.
Yes, it started off really as a popular thing actually in America in 1848 with the Fox sisters, but it's very rapidly transferred to Britain as well, and it did become a popular pastime using a Ouija board or to have a seance and try to contact your dead loved ones. So
they were very much into it. There was no television or radio back then, and when they had parlor get-togethers, this was a very seriously approached recreation, as it were.
Yes, and I think because it started out that way, it was shunned somewhat by scientists because it was a parlor pastime. So it took a while for before scientists started to address it seriously. And, of course, that's a problem that the subject has suffered from ever since as well.
Indeed. The issue of Professor Peter Wadhams getting involved with this field. Professionally, a lot of people would shy away from it, Peter, although you've stood very tall and been forthright about your association, your interest in this field. How has it been professionally for you?
Well, I mean, I haven't been as involved that professionally as many people. I mean, I do a different job as a scientist.
Well, with respect to your peers, perhaps snickering at you or any of that kind of thing.
Well, in a way, I suppose there's an advantage in being in a place like Cambridge because it does have a tradition of people in it being interested in psychical research because it was when the Society for Psychical Research itself was founded in 1882. Most of the people who founded it were scientists from Cambridge. So it has a tradition of at least tolerating people who do psychical research, whereas in many
academic institutions that people like that are not even tolerated. They're kind of forced out by a kind of a sort of inquisition, I suppose.
Well, indeed. Well, I didn't know that the roots of psychical research went back to Cambridge, at least to some degree. That's interesting.
Yes, I think many of the most famous physicists of the late 19th century were interested in the subject and in fact were members, if not active members, of the society when it's first founded. If you look at the early issues of the proceedings of the Society for Psychical Research, which always had membership lists, they included just the most famous scientists of the time. So those people were at least prepared to be interested to take the journal and read the results of research, even if they weren't involved themselves in doing any research.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So that was a time which then passed, unfortunately, when it was regarded as a very respectable field of science.
What was it that that shut the door on that whole discipline?
Was
there any one event, was there any one thing or one time in the early 20th century in which things became uncomfortable for people?
No, in fact, I think things got worse in the late 20th century. The early research of the scientists from the Society for Psychic Research was tremendous. I mean, within about 20 years, they'd really established the existence of all the phenomena, psychical phenomena we recognize today, of telepathy, clairvoyance, and psychokinesis, precognition. They'd done research on these. They'd written books. They'd assembled cases. They'd done laboratory experiments. It was everything really that we know about today. The subject, it was nearly as advanced by about 1900, 1910, as it is actually today. Since those sort of heady days, what the subject then turned into was really statistical research, card guessing experiments, and that was became focused back again in the United States with the work of Ryan and so on at Duke University. Mm-hmm. And that was very, very important research because it established statistically to very, very high levels of significance that these phenomena exist. And you would have thought that would have given the subject tremendous respectability, but somehow it didn't seem to. It was the very fact that the phenomena were being shown to exist very demonstrably that turned conventional scientists off. Because
they worked against it, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, we have to force them to confront the issue, and they didn't want really to confront it.
All right. Hold on. We'll break right there. Come right back. My guests, Michael Roll and Professor Peter Wadhams, talking about survival after death as a branch of physics. Much ahead. Stay right there.
Continues.
And we're back. Professor Peter Wadhams and Michael Roll. Michael Roll, of course, hangs out, as it were, at the website, which has been quite a beacon to a lot of researchers and people interested in this field. The Campaign for Philosophical Freedom, cfpf.org.uk. You can get there by clicking on Michael Roll's name, and you'll go right to it. We're going to look at some photos in a little bit and get comments from Michael and Peter, and later on John Sampson as well. These are very interesting photographs. We'll talk more about them in a few minutes. Sir William Crookes, we have talked about him and spoken of his work in the past, Michael. We need to start out, I guess, from the place that will help most people understand who Sir William was and how important he was on the scene. He was, in some descriptions, almost the Einstein of his day. He was a giant in his field. Tell us more about Sir William, if you would.
Well, I'd rather you went to Professor Wadhams for that, because
I wanted to get both of you. So if you want to lead the way, we'll go right over to Peter.
How I came across Sir William Crookes, because my mother showed me this work right from birth, so I knew what a great scientist he was, and he came in to what Peter was saying into the so-called science world, which was shunned by orthodox science. In fact, they were very angry, the general scientists across the world, because of this interest in the phenomena. And then Sir William Crookes came in to make a careful study of it, and that satisfied orthodox scientists, because they thought, right, we can get rid of this nonsense once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily for us and for posterity, Sir William Crookes came across a materialization medium. Now, these are the mediums that can actually prove survival by repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions. The young medium he came across was called Florrie Cook. And every time Florrie went into a trance in the corner of the room, a few feet away from her, materialized a person from the invisible part of the universe called Katie King. And he did these experiments over and over again. And after a long time of repeatable experiments, he felt he could now publish, which he did. He published in the Quarterly Journal of Science, and of course it really threw a spanner in the works, because orthodox scientists were expecting him to rubbish the whole thing.
Yes.
Here he is, coming out with these revolutionary photographs and reports that this is a genuine phenomenon.
Well, you need to make the point that Sir William Crookes was not only the president of the Royal Society, but he was the pioneer of subatomic physics in his day. He was truly a giant in his time. He was there in the room when these photographs, in many cases, were taken. He wasn't just handed photographs, and he didn't bite on a hoax. He was there when the pictures were taken. That's really important.
Yes, and he invited his close scientists in to witness what was being produced. This is what's so exciting about it. And published in the Quarterly Journal of Science, and it's still on record. Anybody can check it out anytime they like.
It's amazing. All right, stand by. We'll come right back and talk to Peter Wadhams and get his take on Sir William Crookes and the genius in that man and his vision as we continue right after this. Talking with Michael Roll and Professor Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University, live to the UK. Peter, Sir William Crookes, a giant, as I mentioned, in his time. Give us a little bit more on how this man's genius impacted science and how much he stood to lose if it had been disclosed that he was involved with, just say, even one hoaxed photograph.
Well, he was one of the very great experimental scientists of the late Victorian era. There were really giants of science in those days, like Faraday, Lord Rayleigh, Maxwell, J.J. Thompson, Kelvin, Oliver Lodge. They were great people. They ranged across
a wide range of fields. They weren't as confined to narrow specialities as scientists are today. And he was one of the greatest. He discovered the element thallium. He was a fellow of the Royal Society. He did a lot of the original research on cathode rays. We talk about the Crookes dark space in a discharge tube, which is actually where discharge is simply due to electrons. He didn't quite discover the electron. That was later done by J.J. Thompson, but he came very close to that, and he mm-hmm. did some of the original research there. He worked on radiation, and you have the Crookes radiometer as an instrument there. So he worked in a variety of fields of physics and chemistry, and was a great experimental scientist. You find his scientific papers are written in that wonderful way that late Victorian scientists so carefully described their experiments in great detail, so that anybody reading the paper could repeat the experiment. Modern scientists often don't do that. And you could just see what a very fine and very meticulous and careful experimenter he was.
Yeah, I like the way you talk about scientists back then being wide-ranging. They were multidisciplinarians, and I think above and beyond that, they were humanists. They were real human beings, and they never lost sight of the fact that they were talking to the masses. They weren't just speaking amongst themselves in a cloistered little group of academicians and scientists in societies and so forth.
Yes, they believed in the importance of what they were doing. They felt it was important for the progress of mankind that we should understand nature and understand the universe and our environment. They felt that was a moral duty, that it was a noble cause. And also it wasn't so much a career as it is now. Only very few scientists actually had proper financial support. Many of them were people of private means. Mm-hmm. Whereas today it's a career, and so people pursue that career in a fairly selfish way, as everybody does who has to earn a living. And to some extent that's made a difference in that science is no longer regarded so much as a calling or a vocation, and more as a career, which is slightly reduces people's the sort of uplifting moral view of what you're doing as a scientist.
Michael Roll, let's set the stage for some of the photos we're going to be looking at now. If you would, fine young man has put this website together. And for all of you who are online right now or online in the future, listening to this program in the archives, go to the link that says Photo Proof of Continuing Life. We'll all click on that now and let that page load up. Tell us about this site, which is called survivalafterdeath.org, survivalafterdeath.org.
Yes, Tom Jones, a young 20-year-old when he first contacted me, he came across my work and came to Bristol to see me here and was so thrilled with what I was presenting, he started to make a very careful study of it and set up his own website. And he's managed to put many of the missing books on his website, and especially these photographs that we're talking about now. I think Sir William Crookes took about 40 of these photographs during his studies with Florey Cook and Katie King. And I expect you'll see the one there where he's got one of his famous surgeons of the day actually taking pulse rates of the materialized.
We shall take a look at all these pictures one yeah. by one. I think it is important to go back and revisit what I said a few minutes ago. Even if one photograph that Crookes was involved with had been shown or proven to be a hoax, the man's life and career would have been dashed on the rocks to a large degree.
Indeed. And what most people don't know about, because the experts that are called in to rubbish Sir William Crookes, which is what they do, nobody who supports Crookes, like Professor Wadhams and myself, are allowed on media outlets in this country. But what people don't know is that after he published this work in 1874, then international teams of scientists repeated the same experiment with their own materialization mediums. And that's the classic proof of survival. But as you know, Jeff, the reason it didn't really break through is they were nowhere near having the mathematical theory to back up such revolutionary experiments. People fully materializing in solid form from the invisible part of the universe. There's got to be a rational explanation to account for it.
And that's where we point to the work of your colleague and friend Ron Pearson.
Indeed, yes. A lot of people, they were very much in its infancy, subatomic physics then. And also, I want people to look up X-rays in the encyclopedia, and it'll just confirm what Professor Wadhams has just said about the work that Sir William Crookes did on X-rays. It's all subatomic physics and Sir William Crookes in the encyclopedia, if you look that up as well. Yes, indeed. It's very exciting.
All right. Well, let's... Now, Peter, you've seen these photographs many, many times. So what we'll do is let's bring up the first one. And I hope all of you have clicked on the photo proof of continuing life link now in the guest box at the top of Rens.com. I'll get on that page. And the first photograph, I'll try to describe it for those of you who are not online. They're black and white photographs. And the year time frame again of these photographs, Michael?
He published in 1874, so it's just before that date.
Okay, all right. The first photograph is a picture. Let me just read a little bit from the left of the photograph. It sums it up perfectly. This photograph, taken by the eminent physicist and chemist Sir William Crookes using magnesium light, is perhaps the most crucial. Skeptics often attempt to explain away materializations by claiming the medium and the materialized form are one and the same person, i.e. the medium somehow play acts the whole thing by impersonating different individuals using an array of costumes, accents, and so forth. This photograph proves otherwise. Both the medium and the materialized figure can be seen at the same time, proving they were two separate entities. Peter, what about this photograph?
These are actually extraordinary photographs, and you can see why most scientists would recoil in horror, because it exceeds most people's threshold of being of their minds being boggled, because they do show somebody that looks like a perfectly normal person in appearance. But according to the accounts of Crookes and of other scientists who attended these kinds of materialization seances, this figure appeared and sort of formed out of this substance that was exuded by the medium, and became a separate figure that, to all intents and purposes, looked like a normal living person. Now, obviously, the immediate thing you would say is, well, this would be easy to fake, because it's the medium herself doing some trickery, because it was all done in a darkened room, or the medium has an accomplice who appears. And of course, this happened a lot as a fraud in public mediumship displays, because that was a way of making money, and there were many exposures of fake mediums.
Sure, there are always hucksters and frauds to jump on anything unique to try and turn a buck. Sure,
but this particular case looks like one of those, but it wasn't, because it was all done in Crookes' own home under very careful control, and there were other scientists present, and so although we hate to reading the account that Crookes gives in his normal, the same way he writes his papers on physics, you find the accounts of the appearance of this figure. You have to say either he himself was a fraud, or this is real and is a real phenomenon that is just absolutely extraordinary and ought to be investigated much more.
Indeed. Now let's pause right there, take a look at that picture, and we'll come back and continue our conversation in just a few minutes.
Continues.
All right, and we are right back with you. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along. We're talking about the biggest issue of them all. What happens when our bodies break down to the extent that we can no longer use them? Where do we go? The answer seems to be in black and white. No pun intended. We're looking at some black and white photographs. If you just joined us, do go to the guest box at the top of Rentz.com. Click on Photo Proof of Continuing Life. We're on the first photograph there. Michael Roll, this photograph is amazing. And when you read what Crookes said, and next to the photograph it says, Sir William Crookes said in his work, Researches into the Phenomena of Modern Spiritualism, he said, it was a common thing for seven or eight of us in the laboratory to see Miss Cook and Katie at the same time under the full blaze of the electric light, end quote. And the picture itself shows the medium, the materialization medium, Florence Cook, slumped on a chair. She's on the floor next to it. Her head and shoulder are leaning to her left on the seat of the chair. And behind her is a figure wrapped in what appears to be white. The top of the picture, as you'll notice, looks rather fuzzy and almost out of focus, more like ectoplasm does. The bottom of it is much more severely in focus. It's an interesting fade in, so to speak. The picture is described by Tom Jones as saying the towering ectoplasm shape behind her is just beginning to compress into a fully materialized form. That form called herself Katie King. Michael Roll?
Yes, of course, he only had just the one person materializing, Katie King, every time he did his experiments. But as you know, Jeff, I came across a medium that was far superior to Florrie Cook, Rita Gould. And she had as many as six recently deceased people fully materializing. And we've carried on the experiments of Crookes by reuniting these people with their dead loved ones.
Yes.
And as you know, you've had them on, the mothers of these children who
extraordinary,
died.
Yes. Totally extraordinary.
So we've progressed since then, and I give my right arm for you and Professor Wadhams to take part in these experiments. And as you know, Professor Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona is all set now to go ahead. He's got the funding, he's got the time, and when we get one of these materialization mediums to come forward, we can repeat these experiments by Sir William Crookes with all the modern sophisticated recording equipment we now have available to us.
Indeed. Well, just for our listeners who weren't with us earlier in our prior visits, what happened to Rita Gould?
Well, as soon as I witnessed this revolutionary experiment, I knew it was what we were looking for, because all we have to do then is get a scientist like Professor Gary Schwartz to carry out repeatable experiments, get it all on film, then the whole world can see people being reunited with their loved ones. And in 1983, I witnessed this, and I was very naive then. I didn't realize how dangerous it was to the establishment itself. And we're talking about the religious and scientific establishment, who the scientific establishment especially starts everything from when you're dead, you're dead. The mind and brain are the same. And all the time Rita Gould was demonstrating to spiritualists, they weren't paying any money, she was just doing it out of the kindness of her heart. She was no danger to the establishment, because they weren't just going along and treating it like going to the bingo instead of the greatest scientific experiment in history.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I witnessed it, I realized we had to repeat the experiments of Sir William Crookes. So I managed to get a professor of astrophysics, Professor Archie Roy, to go in with the infrared cameras and record it all. But as soon as the establishment heard about this, that she was no longer just demonstrating to spiritualists, she was going to get it on a scientific basis, all hell broke loose, and her life was threatened if she went ahead with the experiments, and terrible lies were being floated about her. And then she backed out. She said, I can't stand this any longer. I'm not going to go ahead. So we've now got to get another of these mediums to come forward, and if we can do that across the internet now and assure the medium that number one priority will always be the safety of the medium.
Indeed.
It's scientists who are on your side who will be working with you, who have already committed themselves to a separate mind and brain. So they have nothing to lose from the experiments. And it'll all be done in secret, because like a fool, I gave publicity to the fact that a scientist was going in to film this.
Yes.
And that's how the establishment found out. So as soon as one of these mediums comes forward and Professor Gary Schwartz starts his experiments, we should clam up. And the first we will know is when Professor Schwartz publishes.
What is Rita Gould doing now, do we know?
We don't know. No, she disappeared. She was so disgusted at the attack on her. That
Oh, understandably.
And she wasn't charging one penny for this incredible inconvenience she was putting herself to.
All right, let's take a look at our second photo and go back to Professor Peter Wadhams of Cambridge University. This photo is number two, right there at the top, if you're just joining the page now. Photography, said Sir William Crookes, is as inadequate to depict the perfect beauty of Katie's face as words are powerless to describe her charms of manner. Photography may indeed give a map of her countenance, but how can it reproduce the brilliant purity of her complexion or the ever-varying expression of her most mobile features? Peter, tell us about this picture in your estimation. It's a, for those of you who are not online, it's a woman standing, facing the camera, eyes open, eye appears to be, one eye looks like it's almost closed. It's the eyelid looks at half-mast. The other eyelid is open, the right eye, her left, and it looks like she's blue-eyed. She's wearing a white scarf or something, like almost like a nun's habit over the top of her head. Her hands are crossed across her chest. Her arms are bare from the elbows down, and she's wearing white. Peter?
Yes, well, all this sequence of photographs shows a very extraordinary figure because in one sense, she's real. She's human-sized. In fact, Crookes drew attention to the fact that she was a different height from the medium and therefore couldn't have been the medium in disguise. But she has a very strange appearance of stiffness, I suppose. She's always posed in the same, almost the same way. There is something very, very interesting about the photographs. I mean, there's not in the sense that there's anything wrong with them, but in the sense that this figure does have a different sort of look and feel from somebody who was a normal human. But in every other respect, it looks like a normal human, and yet when you read the description of how this figure appeared, it appeared out of the this enclosed area where the medium was sitting, and there were many reports during these experiments that of the figure actually forming and then dissipating. So there were some intermediate stages which weren't captured in these photographs, but were in other photographs of the similar things with other mediums, where you have the apparition or the materialized person actually disintegrating before the camera, so that it's something which appears temporarily, seems to have a solid existence and moves and even talks in the case of this figure, and yet then completely disintegrates. So this is the absolutely extraordinary thing about this figure, that it was a temporary appearance. It was solid, people could touch it, and yet then it just disintegrated and disappeared.
Indeed.
So that it's completely inexplicable, and there were very, very few very precious people who were able to achieve this.
Indeed. Let's pause right there, take our top of the hour break, and come right back and look at some more photographs as we continue.